The Buddha once said that all skillful qualities are rooted in heedfulness. Not only that, heedfulness takes you all the way to the deathless. As you say, those who are heedless are already dead. Those who are heedful do not die. So it's good to reflect on heedfulness and the meaning of the Buddha's statements. On the one hand, it means that the development of goodness is not something that just naturally happens on its own. You have to see the importance of your actions, that there are dangers out there, dangers in the mind, and you have to make an effort. But the effort is not doomed. It really does make a difference. Whether you act on skillful mind states or if you're acting on unskillful mind states, it really does make a difference. If it didn't make any difference, then why bother being heedful? Which means that we don't start out by being equanimous about everything. All too often, people read about the Buddha's teachings and they see a lot of his teachings end in equanimity. The factors for awakening end in equanimity, the four Brahma-viharas end in equanimity. It sounds like that's where we're going. And they say, well, as long as we're going there, why don't we just go there first? Why bother with all the steps in between? Well, the Buddha's equanimity is very different from ours. The Buddha's found a true happiness. Notice when he talks about nirvana, he doesn't say nirvana is the ultimate equanimity. It's the ultimate happiness. The word sukha can be bliss, pleasure, ease. And it's worth our while to aim at an ultimate happiness. Equanimity is for the things that either would pull us away from the path or prevent us from moving further along in the path. You have to develop equanimity for those things, the things that if you got really involved in them, you wouldn't have time to practice. You wouldn't have the energy to practice. And even the equanimity of someone who's attained nirvana is not just a blasé attitude toward everything. These people have found the ultimate happiness, and so they don't need to feed on anything else. It doesn't mean, though, that they don't do anything, that they don't see that certain actions are preferable to others, and certain activities are preferable to others. And if they can, they still want to make a difference. John Sawat's comment was that as you're walking along the path, you do everything you can to keep the weeds and the branches and all the other obstructions away from the path, so they don't get in the way of your progress. When you've gotten to the end of the path, as far as you're concerned, those weeds can grow up again because you've gotten to where you want to go. But you look around, you see other people coming along the path, and you have compassion for them. So you do what you can to clean out the weeds. And you see that other people are actually planting weeds in the path. And if you can, you can try to stop that. And then if you see that you can't, well, that's when you have to exercise equanimity. So equanimity there is the last resort, when you realize you can't do something. That's when you think about all living beings are the owners of their actions, and you have to leave it at that. But that's the perspective of someone at the end of the path. While we're on the path, we have to have a strong sense of the importance of our actions. It's like a child learning how to be a mathematician. They figure out how to add 2 plus 2 equals 4 and 3 plus 3 equals 6. And if the teacher told them, this is nothing, the child would never go on to become a mathematician. the teacher has to emphasize the importance of learning addition and subtraction and multiplication and division and how you master algebra and trigonometry so you can get to the calculus. And then use that ability to actually make a difference. If you weren't enthusiastic about even the little steps in the beginning, you'd never get anywhere. So you have to see the importance of what you're doing. When the Buddha was teaching Rahula at the beginning of the path, he didn't say, well, nothing really amounts to much, so don't really try. That would have been the end of Rahula's practice. He never would have gotten anywhere. The Buddha told him, look at your actions. Every time you act, it's important that you look at your motivation before you act. What are you anticipating from the action? Is it going to be for harm or for happiness? If it harms anybody, yourself or other people, it does matter. You don't want to do that kind of action. If you see that's going to cause no harm, you go ahead and do it. While you're doing it, you look at the results that come out. Again, the results are important. This is not a time to think about the fact that ultimately the sun is going to go nova someday and the earth is going to fry to a crisp before it gets dissolved. And there'll be no trace of our ever having been here. That's not the proper frame of reference. The proper frame of reference is, what intentions are you developing? Because even if the sun goes nova, if we haven't reached nirvana by that point, we're going to be somewhere reaping the results of our karma. So you look at the results of your action so you can get more and more skillful. Even after the action is done, you want to review what the results were so you can learn from the action. If it came out well, learn from it. If it didn't come out well, learn from it. How can you figure out how not to repeat that mistake? It's like that series of questions they ask people who are applying to become brain surgeons. People apply to a program like that tend to have good grades. So you can't really tell from the grades whether they're going to be good surgeons or not. So I found out the best questions to ask were, one, can you tell us about a mistake you made recently? If the person couldn't admit to making a mistake, you didn't want that person operating on somebody's brain. The second question is, well, how would you do it differently? Because even if a person admits to a mistake, but doesn't immediately try to figure out how not to repeat the mistake, again, that's not someone you want operating on your brain. Your ability to recognize your mistakes and to learn from them, that really does make a difference. All your thoughts, words, and deeds do make a difference. Because as you focus on them and try to get more and more skillful, that's what gets you on the path. And the path takes you to an ultimate happiness. That makes a difference too. At the same time, you're doing less and less harm in the world. That makes a difference. So have a strong sense that your actions really do make a difference. The fact that we're meditating here does make a difference. Every aspect of the path makes a difference. Because after all, we do start out with a difference. There is pleasure and there's pain. And there's a lot of needless pain in the world. And if we don't do something about our unskillful actions, we're going to be adding more unnecessary pain to the world. And we'll never reach the ultimate happiness that the Buddha said is a possibility for human beings. So watch out for people who start out with equanimity and advise that you start out with equanimity. They make a difference too, but not a good difference. If they talk about how important equanimity is in all things and that no action really matters, then you can ask them, well, why are you even speaking to me? The fact that we act shows that the mind does have a sense of difference. And it's worth your while as the Buddha pointed out, to try to make a good difference. Because if you don't, there's a lot of suffering. That's what heedfulness is all about, realizing that your actions do make a difference. So you want to be very careful about what you do.